Hello and welcome to Mind Your Manners. This week we'll be joined by Richard Luscek and Kerry Mold from the Harn Writers Group, and we'll be discussing the first quarter 2024 Harn Quest release. Cheers and thanks for joining us. Hope you enjoy this discussion with Kerry and Richard. Well, guys, it's been a couple months. Welcome back. Thanks for
Yeah,
taking
thanks
some
for having us.
time. I
Well, thank you.
appreciate it. And today we're talking about Harn Quest. For folks that don't know, HarnQuest, would you describe it more as a zine or just an article release?
So HarnQuest is basically a subscription model. So 4 times a year, we put out 32 pages of new Harn material. And folks can pre-subscribe to it. And if you subscribe, then you just automatically get the next thing that comes out in the Harn Quest. And we've been doing that pretty consistently 4 times a year for about the last 15 years. So we've been pretty consistent on that.
How many folks are writing for it at any given time?
That depends on the articles in it. Sometimes, we have like 4 8-page articles or 2 12-page or, whatever the combination of different articles. So typically there'll be one lead author for each article, and then there'll be contributors, folks who will add portions to it. Of course, Richard does the art for all of it, and Bill Bean is our current mapper. Also, Matt Rogner also does some mapping as well, and Brent Bailey does all the editing for for Harn Quarterly or Harn Quest.
Yeah, and so for this quarter, we've got the Karaz expansion, and we've got the Ushet. Is that how we're pronouncing it?
Sounds
It's
right.
as good as any. Good as any. Yep.
Yeah,
Good as
I'll
any
take
made
it.
up word. So how do you know? I guess first things first. How do we decide what's going to make a cut? We've got 32 pages to work with. We've got X number of illustrations to work with. How is a Karaz expansion making it through versus something else that might be either a passion project or looking at one of the other big redos, because obviously this is kind of on the heels of Azedmir and some of the hardcover books and the Karaz release.
Well, I guess,
So the
I
big
would think it's probably more just interest, for the writers, because, Columbia Games just sort of, I don't want to say they have a hands-off approach, but it's just the writers are sort of the ones driving it. And so most of it has to do with who has an idea of what they want to do. There's definitely stuff for a while, it's been mostly get stuff back in print. And that's getting very close. Depending on who you talk to, it's getting close-ish being done, and so now it is just, what do we have to do? What's lagging behind? We'll do that, and then if somebody has an idea for something that they want to fill in, and just someone can come up with anything really. And then if it runs through the team, and everybody's like, "That sounds like a good idea. Let's work on it." Writers are assigned, or whoever wants to do it the most, it does it. And sometimes stuff gets started and dropped, and someone picks it up sometimes 10 years later, and that's happened a few times. And so, it's, and I wouldn't say we have a rigorous schedule on how things are getting done. Do you agree with that, Carrie? So one of the things that we do is about once a year we have a video conference with all the writers and other team members like Richard, and we go through sort of the state of Harn, like what are we missing? For example, in the Kingdom of Kaldor, we've redone all of the castles except for Minarsis. Minarsis is the only one that hasn't been upgraded with new art and expansion. So we highlight those things that are sort of need some work. We've got a few locations, like for example, Tekken Castle in Rethem has never had a canon article done on it. It's got a couple of fanon articles that are out there, but it's never had a canon article. So we look at all those, and then, as Richard said, we look around. Is there someone who's interested in doing those articles? If so, then someone will take that on and start working on it. And then we also, in that strategy session, we look at
what are the gaps? Like, for example, recently we've been doing a lot of articles on guilds. And so we look at what guilds have been written up, what haven't, who has an interest in which guild. And from there, we'll decide, okay, somebody's going to take on, you know, one of the ones that's being talked about right now is Miners, you know, which is a big, very important guild.
And we've also got whole sections, right? Like, I think when I started subscribing to it, there was a whole bunch of the Avinia section with the Menglana Kingdom that y'all were working on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and that falls in very much into the trying to get everything back into publication. Like, for example, you know, Avinia for a long time was out of print and not available. So if you didn't have one of the copies that came out in the 80s, it was pretty hard to get a hold of. So a big part of that was to go through and bring all that back into publication. And it's kind of been our policy for the last 10, 15 years is that we don't just reprint something. We add value to it by making sure that there's expanded locations, more detail, new art, new maps, so that people get good value for their money. But as Richard has mentioned, we're getting very, very close to the end of the old material. We have one project that's been in fits and starts, which was Quivum Keep in Orbal, which is one of the few places that has not had its re-release. But aside from that, there's getting to be very, very little that has not been republished. And so now we're getting into entirely new territory. And we're doing stuff that has never been seen before.
Well, that's gonna feel exciting, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, you get to tread some new ground, and you know, not to ask a cynical question, but do you have to take into account like the idea that we want to print something that people are going to purchase, or is it really like so passion driven that no one's really concerned about that, like? You know, do we think we can move, you know, 200 copies of this after the fact or something like that? Do you really just get to have free reign over that?
I would say no. I think you got to think about the customer. I mean, we definitely do. I mean, there's times where people bring up something and everybody's like, well, I mean, a lot of times that how that discussion will go is someone will say, that sounds great. Why don't you do that and release it as Fanon rather than Canon? So I think, you know, I mean, we take that into account. And Brent is big on, you know, kind of being, making sure stuff's viable and that it's going to have enough interest. And so, I think, yeah, we definitely think about that. I don't know, you know, I mean, Harn is, you know, obviously kind of a smaller niche product anyway. And so, you know, it's not like, I mean, you could argue that a few of the articles in the line, you know, like, I don't know how many people are purchasing the goats article, you know, but I mean, I think it's kind of fun. It has some cool things in it that might be useful in a game. But there's sometimes you don't know. I mean, we are covering some minutiae at times in some of the stuff, but I think generally, I think now that we're doing new stuff, I mean, I think that allows for people to have fun with it. And the occupations is the big one now, which I think is very helpful for players of Harn who are, you know, want to play something other than your typical fighter, play some other character. And, you know, so if they want to play a miner or a guy who runs a mining operation, or even if it's somebody, a merchant who deals with miners, I mean, so now there's going to be that information on how that's going to go down. So,
yeah, I found those to be very insightful in, you know, trying to conceptualize how I would bring some of these different roles to life, you know, as you're just interacting with people in the community. And some of those articles, they're not huge, right? Like, they're a component in that 32 pages that you're releasing quarterly. Mm-hmm. I think there was one that was, you know, 2 or 3 pages, you know, nothing that's like going to feel like homework or anything to read,
right?
But it's going to give you that capability of running it and presenting it kind of realistically.
Well, and a big part we look at too is like, what is the the game relationship of the article. You know, is this a place you might go to visit? Is this a type of character you might play or you might encounter? Like, we do try and look at it from a gaming lens to say, you know, and if we're going to do a location, it's like, what are some adventure hooks that we can put in that will make it an interesting place for a GM to send his characters or for a player to want to be from there or to, you know, want to lead their campaign in that direction? Like, hey, we want to go visit Sharan, or we want to go to Araka Kalai or something like that. You know, it has to come from that angle, because in the end, you know, Harn is very much about playing and using the setting. And so we want to make sure that the articles we release are relevant.
For this quarter's release, we've got the Karaz expansion and the Ushet article. So tell me a little bit about expanding Karaz. Like, obviously we had a 22-page article, give or take, maybe 18 pages, for the original Karaz that saw release. Was that as part of Wrethem, or was that?
Well, that came out just about the same time as the Azedmir hardback was released.
Okay.
So it was kind of done in conjunction with because again, Karaz was only ever available as part of the of an adventure trilogy that has not been republished. The Search for Pananga, I think, is the title of the trilogy, and it's a very, very high fantasy, like ultra high fantasy. You go to heaven and involve yourselves in the wars between Agric and Larani and things like that. It's very, very different than a typical Harn adventure. As a result, Karaz was kind of, because it was part of that trilogy, was kind of a little bit lost to everybody who didn't have one of the original printings of it. So we decided to bring it out again as part of the Azedmir hardback, you know, to kind of tie in with the dwarves. And one of the things that was obvious when we redid Karaz is that it's a very hard place for a game master to get their players into, because it's sealed with like ultra high magic doors and wards and stuff like that. So not easy to get your players into. And in the redoing of the original, we started looking at that and saying, well, what can we put in there that will give the average GM and the average player an opportunity to engage with Karaz? And so that's where we got into the discussion of what is outside the central core of the city. You know, the central core is quite small, and the city was rumored at one point to be like 6,000 people. So you couldn't have 6,000 people living in that little area that was mapped. So we started looking at that. And so for the original, when we put out the part one of Karaz, we expanded, there's a small map section that was in the original, and we gave a little more detail as to what was outside that core part of the city. And so that was step one. And then we were looking at that, and we had always wanted to go back and like give the GM some more detail of what was outside that core. And that's where the idea for the Karaz expansion part two came, is that we wanted to show and to sort of give the GM permission and the players permission to go explore those other areas of Karaz, even if they didn't have one of the secret keys that would get you into the core part of the city. There was plenty to explore. And so we wanted to make that more available to GMs and players.
And when you were thinking about your approach to that, was the approach always going to be, this is designed from the outset to be a dungeon crawl expressly? I mean, it's something that if you follow the Facebook group, you're going to see questions from time to time, like, how do I run a dungeon crawl and using Harn, you know?
Yeah, and I would say that this is a little bit different. You know, when I think of a dungeon crawl, I think of Keep on the Borderlands, you know, the original sort of D&D module, where you had all these tunnels and caverns with like random monsters living right next to other random monsters with strange like treasure and stuff like that, just sort of randomly placed throughout the dungeon. With Karaz, we were looking very much as this was a city. This was alive. There were people living there who worked 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, you know. So what were they doing? Where did they work? Where did they live? You know, where did they go to market? And the idea is to basically show you what it looks like 600 years after it was abandoned. And so instead of being a random dungeon crawl, this is very much more like an archaeological visit. Like you're going to a place that's been abandoned for 600 years. But it's not empty, right? Because the Gargan still trek in and around that area. There are still Ivashu and other creatures in those caverns. So it's not completely empty. And it is a dangerous place to tread.
Yeah, spoilers, by the way.
Yeah, spoilers.
Yeah, if you're a player and you want to play this, turn this off right now.
Yeah.
Let your watch after your GM runs it for you.
Yeah, we'll try not to spoil every surprise.
I won't give everything away. There you go.
So of course, you know, on that topic, the companion piece to this is the Ushet Gargan colony. As written by Andrew Boyan, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, who couldn't join us today. So we're not going to dive too far into that. But there's some very interesting things in that article as well. One of the things that really caught my eye there was kind of Gargan NPCs, if you want to take them that far, which as someone who's relatively new to the setting, I sometimes have a difficult time wrapping my head around how to portray them. So I was hoping, you know, when you were looking at these articles as the Harn Writers group, what was the approach to setting some of this into canon, as far as like portrayal of the Gargan in these cases?
For people who don't know, Gargan are Harnic orcs, and they're similar to Lord of the Rings orcs in a way, but there's five species of them that are kind of a little different, ranging in size and even aggressiveness and just different ways that they live their life. So, and that goes through them pretty in depth.
And yeah, there is a good overview in Harn World and in the Harn decks.
Okay, so. Yeah. It's interesting that so just the art direction side of it, for me, I mean, I can't say I haven't been heavily influenced by, you know, like Lord of the Rings films and modern interpretations of what orcs look like in film and TV stuff. And so I always thought, I mean, the Gargan have always been pretty cool in Harn, and I like the way they were kind of integrated into the world. But the look early on, I always thought, to me, it just felt more like they look more like bugbears to me. And I try real hard to keep the flavor of that, but I think mine have pushed more towards, you know, what we think of, a typical goblin or orc to look like. And I think their weapons are interesting. They have a real specific way that they do their weapons. You know, they have the Mang, which is a cool sword with a club on the back of it, and the one thing that I did for Ushet, which was fun, is, you know, they sort of are obviously squatting, and I mean that's kind of their main deal, is they're the Harnic squatters, and so they move into old, you know, ruins and set up their own, you know, base, and so I worked real hard to try to slip in things like they're wearing a lot of old dwarven armor and, you know, jewelry and pieces they've found, and they figured out how to cobble all that stuff into their own, you know, the main, let me bring it up here, the main kind of bodyguard type orc is wearing Whoops. Hold on 1 second. He's wearing an all dwarven helmet. Let me see if I can bring that up. And then I took that right off the cover of the old Athenmir module that Eric Hotz drew. So that's almost the exact helmet. And I just stuck it on this goblin. And it's a little banged up and has some repairs on it. And he's even wearing what looks like a, what is it? Is that the dwarven Logard?
Yeah.
Heraldry? And so, you know, they're just finding different bits and pieces and sticking it on and using it for their stuff. So so that was the fun part of working on this, was to try to figure out, okay, they moved into this old space. How are they using it? What are they doing with the stuff? And that's the same in Karaz, actually. So a lot of the stuff that shows up there, it's them kind of appropriating what's, you know, the dwarves made some good stuff, so they're going to use it.
Right, yeah.
And the big thing is Ushet is the used to be the hunting lodge of the king of Karaz. So that was its original purpose. And well, it started off as a mine and then converted into a hunting lodge. And it was all sealed up when the dwarves abandoned Karaz 600 years ago. It was only found by the Gargan like 300 years ago. And they've moved in and they've expanded the living quarters there. And they're using it as a base. And they do explore quite a bit in the tunnels under Karaz and the mining, the mine shafts of Karaz. But they get most, they do also hunt outside. And they have conflicts with the local barbarian tribes and stuff like that. So it's an interesting group. And when we talk about the NPCs, one of the things that we try and do is make people realize that these Gargan are intelligent, sentient beings, right? They have personalities, they have agendas, they are trying to, they have what they want to do. It may be foul and horrible, but they have a plan and they're pursuing that plan. And I might have mentioned this before, but I consider one of my greatest successes as a GM in Harn was I showed my players how dangerous Harnic combat was with a minor skirmish. And a little bit later, they ran into some white orcs who are among the more reasonable orcs. And the players were like, can we negotiate with them first? And I knew that they had understood like the danger of Harn, and also they'd sort of taken on a board. And as it turned out, the white orcs will trade just about anything for silver. They love silver above all else. And so they were willing to trade nuggets of gold for silver coins. And the players actually made out quite well on that encounter. And, you know, it was very much on purpose, is that I wanted to have them think that, you know, yes, Gargan are nasty and they will try and kill you, but they are also sentient beings, and, you know, you can negotiate and there are lots of references in canon to people negotiating with Gargan for passage on like, for example, on the Silver Way, you know, trading like a donkey or a mule for safe passage sort of thing. So it's obvious that there are ways to interact with Gargan, best done from a position of strength. You know, if you show weakness, they'll probably eat you. But if you show strength, then you might be able to negotiate.
Yeah, no, that's enlightening, because it's something where you want to get that Harnic flavor rather than just, here's your orc, you know, go ahead and slaughter it, right? You know, that's what makes it Harn, as opposed to making it any other setting, regardless of the gaming system you're using. So, you know, coming back to the Karaz expansion module here, there's a lot of work done here to invoke a sense of place. And while I haven't seen much of the art to go with it yet, as that's still a work in progress, You know, Carrie, why don't you first tell me a little bit about how, what kind of feeling you wanted to give to this, and then Richard, we'll take a look at your process for bringing some of these set pieces to life for the players and the readers.
Sure.
So very much with what I was looking to do was I wanted to give a cross section of the possible places you might go in Karaz. So in looking at, we had done the map for part one, which showed the royal complex and the area around it. So I knew I wanted to look at least one neighborhood so people could see where the Khuzdul lived and how they lived. I wanted to show a little bit of the Great Chasm, the main cavern that's connected to Karaz, a workshop, which, you know, would show all the technology and stuff that the dwarves were using. And then I wanted to go a little bit deeper into the mines and what would we see as you went deeper into the mines, with the idea that these are things that could be repurposed. If a GM was wanting to take their players into a lost Khuzdul mine in the mountains, the Sorkin Mountains or something like that, they could reuse some of these plans and illustrations for something like that. Richard's just popped up a cross section of the Great Chasm, which is the sort of core of the where all the industry and some of the neighborhoods of Karaz are.
And I think, you know, it's got a number of points of interest that are going to be very fun to explore. There are a whole host of location maps, like we saw elsewhere. But Richard, you have a very perhaps unique way of laying out some of your settings when you're doing your illustrations and paintings here. I have seen on your YouTube channel a number of your SketchUps for cities.
Right.
Did you bring SketchUp into any of these illustrations for this particular
art class? Yeah, quite a few, actually. And I'm not the best at coming up with, towns and cities out of my head. I mean, I have a hard time picturing it. I'll show you what I used to do. This is way back. So I used to actually just build models out of foam. And so, which do you recognize this one, Carrie? Which one is this?
I think it's Glenna.
Yeah,
in Meldrin.
Yeah, and so I used to do that, and I'd build them and take them outside and shoot them in the sun, figure out what the lighting would be, and that took too long. It took a long time, and then so these 3D SketchUp came up, and it just made it a whole lot easier for me to really quickly. And then so really, I'll bring it up. This is Uset, and so basically all I have to do here is see this is the map. So I bring the map in, just bring in the map, and I can draw right on the map and drag up and type in the exact elevations that are on the map, and that way I get everything just right. And then I don't know how well you can see all this.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good.
That might be glare now.
Yeah, a little bit of glare. But I will also link in the description for the podcast and the video, some of your cityscapes that you've done as well, so that folks can see like how extensive this is. Because when we see your drawing, we actually only see a small subset of the work that has gone into this, right?
Yeah, I will admit, I mean, it is a little bit like, I've described it as being a little bit like someone dumping out a box of Legos, and you just can't stop. And so I used to just do, like, some of my early models have very little in them. I just picked a view and would do them. And lately I was like, well, I could spend another couple hours and finish the whole thing and then do a fly through of it. And I'll bring up, let's see.
Yeah, because you did this the big, for the first Karaz article, I remember you posted something for that right. entrance.
Right.
And you know, like some of my favorites, certainly when Richard did Azedmir City, that's an amazing fly through, and you can see all the different parts of the city, and you can really see how he sort of looked around to get a good angle to be able to, you know, be the perfect place to do the illustration from.
So this just makes it super easy.
So this is the gatehouse, the Crossroads Gatehouse, and go ahead.
So yeah, and so I just use, you know, little placemat men to get proportions, and then here I'll show you the final image of that. So I, you know, just it's great for me just to build the model, and then I can look around and I can say what would be the most interesting parts to see and what would be a good view to see, what is the simplest thing. And then I can move the lighting too. So the lighting, you know, in a cave it doesn't really matter because the light is all, that's the one thing that I will say has been very challenging about, you know, two articles that take place completely underground. It's a little challenging to figure out where's the light coming from. And so I am probably kicking the light up on everything just so that, you know, you can at least see what the heck's going on. And, you know, there's a few other magical things that you'll find out once you get into some of these places that help light it. And then there's some, you know, glow in the dark mushrooms that help. And then, you know, if I really need to, I'll just assume that someone's looking at this with a torch in their hand. And so, but it definitely gives me, you know, I can definitely see, I can look around and see where I want to be. And, you know, and so just be basic, you know, if I had to figure out where all of these windows were, you know, with a, you know, just with a ruler and measuring everything, it would take me a long time. So if I get it this way, I can move around and get it for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, we've got a limited art budget. There are a large number of, let's say, points of interest. How are we deciding what makes the cut?
Somebody does. Brent figures out the budget, and so he budgets for, you know, the writing and the maps, and then the art finally. And so then what will happen is I get an article with just spaces, empty spaces, and either the writer or Brent will suggest, here's what should go in this spot, or they just say, you know, read it and figure it out, you know, see, you know, usually it's pretty obvious what should go there. And I don't always listen to what I'm told to do, but, you know,
like any good employee.
Right. And it's nice. I mean, I gotta admit, I love it. I have complete freedom, and it seems like everybody kind of trusts me that eventually I'm going to come out with something interesting and fun. And I think sometimes, you know, especially when we're doing, you know, castle article after castle article, like the same things come up, like do a picture of the gate, do a picture of the guy that runs the, you know, it all gets kind of boring. And I'm like, well, you know, so then I get bored. And so I have to come up with something unusual and to at least entertain myself. And I will say, you know, since I'm not exactly, you know, I'm not really a writer, I do come up with some ideas occasionally that once in a while we'll get listened to, but I tend to write in my illustrations, you know, and I invent little stories and weird things that, you know, I'm kind of thinking what, you know, what would be happening here. So I'll write a little story for myself as to what is actually going on in the space. And so let's see if I can come up. Well, I'll bring up this one.
Maybe make that a little bit bigger.
Right. That's the finished image of what you saw. And so there's a waterfall. Is there crazy glare? There's where I am. There's a waterfall back here that I sort of figured would be reflecting some light. So I did anything I could to force the image. I like to do silhouettes because I think they're clean And I just like the way they look. So this one has a little bit more form and actual things going on in the background than I usually do with them. But it gives a good feeling of just the struggle of getting through this place where the drawbridge is stuck up and there's some makeshift Gargan bridges thrown in there that you have to try to get past. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's got a sense of action to it and exploration. I think it really hits the feel of what the prose is going for as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the big things as a writer. You know, I like to work really closely with Richard and kind of explain what I see in my mind's eye when I'm doing the writing. And, you know, we really have made big strides in the last, you know, decade or so with now doing all color illustrations for all of our primary illustrations are in color. They really bring the place to life. You really, you know, you can imagine yourself being there. And one of the things that I look for as a writer is images that a GM could show their players to give them an idea of where they are and what's going on, right? So in this case, you know, you come through the gatehouse and you go across a partially lower drawbridge and you got to scramble down over some Gargan, crudely made crossing point sort of thing. And I was thinking, well, how do you explain that to the players? Well, the answer is, let's do an illustration of it. And then that way, you know, the GM can hold it up and say, well, this is what you see. And so that's a big part from my point of view is the sort of things that I'm looking for as a writer is to convey, you know, and because one of the things I've always struggled with as a GM is I don't necessarily want to show my players the map, right? Because I've got that map. It's got secret rooms on it. It's got, you know, details of where the bad guys are hiding out. I don't want to show that to my players. So how do I get across to them? What is the place they're in and what does it look like? And that's where it really comes out with the art and it allows you to sort of convey that without giving away all your secrets.
Well, even the poetic map here, which this is something you could give to a player, doesn't have a lot of information, and it could be something they found. And there's, and I labeled everything in, you know, my own, I actually used runes and wrote this stuff out, labeled it with runic, kind of as if it was written by a dwarf or somebody. I don't know who, we don't know who made the map. And so a lot of this is generalized and simplified. So it gives the idea, but it doesn't give any hidden things that you wouldn't want somebody to know. And so I like to do that too. And the other thing that I do a lot of times is I know, I think a lot of people enjoy the bird's eye views of certain locations. And I'll get talked into it once in a while, but I'll only do them if there's a way that you can actually look down into a place, because as a player, you would never have that view. And so it feels anachronistic to me to show up, you know, from a helicopter view of a town. And I know it's probably great for the GM to see it. And it might be, that's probably one of the reasons I started really making sure I pushed the SketchUp stuff, because then, you know, someone can actually walk through the town a little bit and see what's going on and get a better view of it. But I like to just show what's a player going to see. He's going to be standing outside the gate, looking up at the guard, you know, with a loaded weapon, looking down on him, not, you know, floating over, getting to see all the secret spots he could hide out in. So I tend to try to keep it to a player's view and, you know, as much as I can. So, I mean, even in Usette, I showed on the first page of Usette, I showed, something, and I made sure that you had to be on a cliff, a special cliff. I found a place where you could actually see that view. So if a player is willing to climb up there, he'll be able to see that view. And so, I think a lot about game use too when I'm doing the illustrations. So, yeah. And thing that does happen occasionally is that sometimes with the writers and the mappers, think is going to happen when they're writing and mapping it ends up not being possible. Or it just, you're like, wait, this doesn't make sense when I 3D model it. And nobody caught it because, you know, we're not always thinking in that way. And so it helps sometimes pick out stuff that just doesn't make sense and find things that way. So it's pretty helpful.
Coming back to these pairs of articles, you know, we do have a lot of, or several, I should say, kind of iconic set pieces. We have, you know, this large chasm. We have what will become known as the retreat. We have some very interesting encounters as well. Mm-hmm. You know, both, shall we say, good and bad. What do you feel really stuck the landing in this article? Like, where you nailed the tone that you were going for, you know, maybe brings into play a certain scenario that you were hoping to convey. Was there anything that you just felt like just clicked perfectly?
I would have to say, so Richard just finished the illustration for the retreat. Looking at that illustration, it was exactly what I had envisioned. So that was really cool to see. You know, it really came across that, you know, here's a place that, you know, I wrote a little sort of one paragraph about in part one of Karaz, and now it's been expanded out. We've got detail of what it is, where it is, what it looks like, what's going on there. So I really do feel that is got a mystic and mysterious sense of a location. And it really, it is one part that I'm really, really pleased how it turned out. I also really like the Crossroads Gatehouse, which we just looked at the picture of. That one really, that was the very first location I wrote up in the article. And it's the one that I think really, it came out exactly as I had envisioned it. So it really has turned out very well. And the mapping that Bill Bean's done has been really great. He's really captured. I do like a sketch, a rough sketch of what I think the place looks like. And in the case of the gatehouse, it actually changed a couple times during the process of writing it up. You know, there were some suggestions from the other writers and from Brent on how it could, you know, look a little different and maybe be a little better. So it is like version 3 sort of thing of it. But it did turn out really well. And in the end, I'm extremely happy with those. And all of the articles really, or all of the sort of locations in the article, really have a very dwarven feel. Again, Bill's done a great job at capturing that sort of dwarven feeling, and Richard's done a great job capturing the sort of the look and feel. One of the things I will give credit where credit is due. If you watch any of the making of the Lord of the Rings, they talk a lot about the iconography of the different races. And, you know, we have adopted a little bit of the dwarven look and feel to kind of not be slavish, but to kind of complement, and, you know, so that you could tell that these are maybe the cousins of the people in the Lord of the Rings, you know, the distant that they split off thousands of years ago, but they, you know, have some things in common with their Middle Earth brethren. So,
but I agree with what you say. I think that, like, even the gatehouse, it's kind of cool, because when you think about just the way this place is structured, it's almost like it's the back door, you know, of the place. And so it really gives a whole feel of, this is a city that was lived in. And so how you can kind of picture how it operated just by the different locations and the way they're sketched out. And, you know, and it is interesting just the way the article kind of happened, because, you know, I think Carrie, you went through it, and there was a bit of a weird moment where we thought, you know, sometimes you got to beg for some feedback a little bit more than you want to, I think, you know, like people read the article and don't say much. And then all of a sudden we're about to do something and someone says, oh, wait a minute, this is bothering me. And you're like, wait a minute, now I have to rewrite this? What's going on? So.
And I will, again, give credit where credit is due. Jonathan Davidson did jump in and help out with the article. He's injected some interesting NPCs and some interesting scenarios to bring the place to life. And, you know, Brent's done a lot of editing and you know, rewriting in places. I think sometimes Brent doesn't get enough credit as the editor, because he really does a great job of combining the work of many different writers so that it feels like Harn is all written in the same way. And that's quite a talent. And that's a challenge when you've got multiple different writers who've got, you know, different styles and different phraseologies and stuff like that, and bring it all together. So it's really hard to tell where one writer's writing ends and another one's begins. Like any article, for Harn writers, it's not one person's article. You know, you might have a lead author who will do a lot of the writing, but then it goes through that crucible of the Harn writers group, where everybody has a look at it and has a comment, and you have to have a bit of a thick skin, because sometimes the criticism, you have to kill your darlings, right? So sometimes there are things that you thought really were very cool and everyone else is like, yeah, that's dumb, don't do that. It's all part of the process, and in the end I think that the final product is a lot better for it, because it really is a much more solid, well thought out, and gives interesting scenarios for the players to interact with.
Yeah. And on the topic of the final product, how far off do we think a release on this one is?
Text is with Columbia Games right now for final sign off on the content of that. Richard is just wrapping up the last of the art pieces. The maps are all done.
I think I have four to do.
It's and one of the things that's nice about the Harn Quest is because it's done as a PDF, like literally when we get the final okay from Columbia Games and Richard puts the last, hands off the last piece of art to Brent, and it's assembled, that goes out like the next day, right? There's not weeks of delay. Like literally when the people receive it, it's 2 days after we've done the final assembly when it's in your hands. So yeah, it's pretty quick
and huge.
Yeah.
And I will note here is a little kudos to Richard here, is that if you're a fan, read the article very carefully and take a good close look at the illustrations. There are little Easter eggs buried in the article for those who go looking. So it's definitely worth having a close read and a close look at all the illustrations.
Yeah,
I like to hide things and tell little stories. So there's stuff in there. Like even there's a scene in the market, and I put a random shield in and made up my own little shield design that maybe somebody will, it could be an entire clan of dwarves, and I make up little things like that, and I don't know if anybody will notice this, but the lanterns in some rooms are the same as the lanterns in Azamir in some of the rooms. And so I just, not that there's a, dwarven Walmart where they're all buying their stuff, but they probably do have, they might all visit the best lantern maker in Azamir or somewhere, and, so stuff, they're a little different, but they're similar. So I try to drag that stuff in best I can.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I know we are at the end of our time here. So thank you both for joining me today. And we'll catch up, hopefully, in the next few months, weeks. We'll see.
Next Harn Quest. Sure. We can do another one. Yeah.
Yeah.